Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi. What you are about to listen to is raw and real from two moms who had children with severe disabilities from premature births, and they're sharing their child's story and their journey from that birth through the death, the deep and fierce love they had and still have for their child is strongly evident, along with how much they miss their child and the joy their child brought into their life and the life of others around them. I think this is one of the most touching interviews I've had. But before we get to my talk with Marie and Deborah, I want to thank Chris and Renee Treblehorn for sponsoring today's episode in honor of their son, Aaron. Renee shares, Aaron was born on August 16, 1999. September 11th will be the 5-year mark of you not being here with us. How can this be? It still seems so surreal at times. I miss you texting me a photo of the big fish you caught or a short video of your crazy antics on a snowmobile. I miss your smile and hugs. I keep telling myself, one day closer, as Laura taught me to say, I have seen eagles and cardinals almost daily lately, and that brings me a little peace and calm. There are so many things I wish you could see with all of us here on earth, but I am hoping and believing that you are seeing even better things. Happy birthday, my sweet boy, with all our love today and every day. Chris and Renee Treblehorn and family. Thank you again, Chris and Renee, for sharing Aaron with us and sponsoring today's episode in his memory. Because this is a lengthy interview, I am not going to read the bios of the two moms, but they are in the show notes so you can read about each one of them. Without taking any more time here, let's play my talk with Deborah Arona and Marie Jackson. Well, hello, Deborah and Marie. I just want to thank you both so much for joining me today. I am just so blessed and honored to have you both here joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. So Deborah is in Texas, and we met her and her husband, Salvador. They came to one of our GPS Hope and Healing retreats in Texas, and we've kind of kept in touch. It's here and there. I mean, we have kept in touch, and maybe not as much as I wanted to, but we have. Yeah. And Marie has also been to a GPS Hope and Healing retreat, but she is also someone I have the blessing to spend time with because she's in our local GPS Hope Share and Care group, and we have become friends beyond the group. So we're going to start out by, I want to give both of you a chance to share your child with us. So Deborah, why don't you go ahead?
Yes. Hello. I'm Deborah, and my child's name is Aria, and she was born very prematurely at 25 weeks. And that is the source of where her disabilities came into play. She spent 110 days in the neonatal intensive care unit. And in that time, she had to gain her weight was 1 pound, 4 ounces, and she was not ready to be sent home to finally begin living life at home until she reached 5 pounds. And that took 110 days. Mm. And in that time, she did have to deal with a lot of things, medically speaking. She had a retinopathy of prematurity, which is a premature child eye issue, and it was corrected with a laser eye surgery. And she also had to have a PDA, which is a patent ductus arteriosus repair. So it's like a heart valve that's supposed to close when you're born. It didn't close. So they had to go in and surgically do that. And she just had a lot of things that she had to deal with in there. It took so long because she was not fully developed yet. So we had to wait for her to grow into a sustainable life in the NICU. And when she came home, we were just really waiting for her to continue to grow. So it was mostly just letting her rest and grow. She was sent home on oxygen just to supplement for the lack of her lungs being the appropriate size. So we had to wait for her lungs to grow into her little body. And she had other things like a pulse ox. And for the most part, she was just very small. When she came home, she was only 5 pounds, but she was like 4 months old. So she didn't really catch up to her size appropriate for her chronological age till much later. But with being so small came other issues. And with being born so prematurely, other issues. Her primary diagnosis was spastic quadriplegia cerebral palsy, which is a diagnosis where the brain and like just the control that you want to happen, it's just kind of out of sync. So the muscles and the brain are not really working together like we want. And so she had a mobility issue. She was non-ambulatory that impacted most of her brain and the ability for her brain to help her body function correctly. So she was also non-speaking. She could vocalize, but no words to be deciphered in her life. As she continued to grow, she also was not able to consistently contain a suck and swallow. So she had issues with needing to be fed. And so she was on a feeding tube. She had a feeding tube to help sustain her nutrition so she could continue to live and grow. And she had that from age two through her passing. It was mainly cerebral palsy, the feeding tube. Later in life, she developed a seizure disorder and other things like severe scoliosis. And then she had chronic pneumonia throughout her life. All things that stem back to her being born very prematurely. There was no like genetic anything that we were aware of. Everything just was as she was more delayed. More diagnoses came and more interventions came in, more medications, more equipment, more therapists, and the medical team just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And she was able to live with us and stay with us for 15 years, 15 beautiful years. She absolutely adored going to school. She was a social butterfly. For somebody who's non-speaking, she was quite the social butterfly. She had a really great smile, a boisterous belly laugh, and she really just brought so much joy to everybody that she encountered. Some of her favorite activities that she liked to do was baking, especially the sweet treats. Her favorite sport with the assistants was bowling. She was able to do that with ramps that are provided at bowling alleys. So she really enjoyed that. And she really, really just enjoyed being around people and feeling included. And she really didn't like feeling that somebody didn't want to be around her or was uncomfortable being around her. She really liked to just be in the company and the presence of other people. And she was also an organ donor and an organ and eye donor. She was mainly a tissue donor, which is mostly like bone and heart valves, and her corneas were donated as well. As far as we know from the procurement agency that worked with us, that her donation could over time help upwards of like 60 people. So, in addition to her legacy, including just being this beautiful, fun-loving, very social person, we think that's a wonderful addition to her legacy that we like to include when we talk about her. So, that's just a little bit about my Aria.
Yeah, thank you. Now, what exactly caused then her death?
Her death was, we saw it coming. We were kind of preparing for it as her diagnoses were taking a toll on her body. She was in palliative care for 5 years prior to her death. For those that are not familiar, palliative care is like comfort care. So our medical decisions at that point were more about her comfort and her quality of life versus her quantity of life. So it's not hospice. So death was not imminent, but we wanted her to be comfortable as we were making the approach towards her end. So a few months prior to her death, we discovered a lump in her left breast. And we did consult with doctors and surgeons. And over time, it was growing exponentially, very quickly. We reconsulted and we did approach her. And when we presented the options to her to remove the lump or to leave it, she was very adamant about it didn't feel good. She didn't want any part of that. So we had a lumpectomy. In recovery from the lumpectomy, she had a major respiratory distress event, and it required her to be admitted to the PICU, the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. And we were there for approximately 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer than that, before the doctors had the conversation with us that she was not getting better. Her respiratory distress developed into a double pneumonia, and she just really struggled a lot to breathe over the vent. She actually never really did. And after so much time seeing her body struggle and doctors doing everything they could to try to help her overcome these pneumonias in her lungs, it just became clear that it was just not working. It was a very difficult decision, but we ultimately, again, comfort care. We wanted to do what was most comfortable for her. So on the last attempt of extubation, we allowed life to naturally occur, and she did die. Her body was just done. It was just time.
Oh, thank you, Deborah, for sharing her with us. All right, Marie, let's hear about Max.
So Max was born prematurely. He was 5 weeks early. He was 5 pounds, 8 pounds, or 5 pounds, 8 ounces when he was born. He's born on Christmas Day of 2006. He had a rough life from the get-go. He was born with GBS, sepsis and pneumonia. It took them a while to intubate him. He went to Madison. I got a phone call from a general surgeon at Meritor when he was 12 hours old, and he told me he needed to put him on an ECMO machine, which is a heart-lung bypass machine that they use in open heart surgery. He listed all the risks of him being on this machine. He said either that or he was going to die in 2 hours. I was still in Janesville at the time. My doctor released me to go to Madison, but I was not allowed to drive. So when I was finally able to go up there, he was in the PICU, and they were doing surgery to put him on the ECMO machine. Every risk that I was told about, he ended up with. He ended up with a, he started out with a grade one intraventricular hemorrhage or IVH on his brain from the ECMO machine. It went to a grade two, and then it went all the way to a grade four, which is the highest that it could go to. He also developed hydrocephalus, which is too much spinal fluid, CSF on the brain. That is also from the ECMO machine as well. We found that out when he was 2 days shy of being a month old. His first initial stay in the hospital was 6 weeks long. When we were finally able to go home, he ended up back in the hospital again. We were in and out of the hospital for his whole 9 years of his life. He lived to be 9 years, 5 months, and 2 days. He was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. He had spastic quad cerebral palsy. He had epilepsy, which is seizure disorder. He had hip dysplasia. He did have hip surgery at one point. He was 3 years old when he had hip surgery. We did battle pneumonia quite a bit with him. He had aspiration pneumonia a lot. We battled that for 6 months straight. And then we were finally able to do surgery, and they did a fundoplication, which is taking the stomach and wrapping it around the esophagus. That actually corrected the aspiration pneumonia. It was the best thing I ever did for him, to be honest. One of the best things. He also was cognitively and developmentally delayed. Like, he aged like, 9 years old, but in reality, he was like a 1 or 2 year old. In reality, he was not at the 9-year-old level. He did go to school. He was in early childhood. And then he would spend 30 minutes to an hour in a regular ed classroom to be with regular ed peers. Other than that, they kept him in with the disabled kids. As he grew and as I got to know him, I knew the signs to look for with the hydrocephalus. I always knew when it failed, he would either start crying uncontrollably, or he would start vomiting, or he would start hitting his head. And that's when I knew that the shunt had failed. And he did that the last week of school of June of 2015. He started crying uncontrollably. He was hitting his head. I called his neurosurgeon's office, talked to the nurse, and she said, "I want you up here." I'm like, "Okay." So we went up there, did a quick brain MRI. They did surgery the next day. And because of all the surgeries that he had, overall, in the 9 years that he lived, he had 43 surgeries in his 9 years in life. We went home that weekend. The whole last year of his life, he was in and out of the hospital because it kept getting infected. He had a stroke in July of 2015. He lost all of the skills that he had. He did say some words. He knew some signs. He was always a happy-go-lucky kid. He could be the sickest kid in this plant on the planet Earth, and he was usually happy. I mean, he would cry. You would know he was in pain. As the years went on, I felt when a seizure was coming on. His seizures were related to internal and out and external temperature. So if it was too hot outside, he would have a seizure. And if he was running a fever and I couldn't get the fever under control, then he would have a seizure. My grandma always told me that Max taught everybody what life was really about because he was happy-go-lucky and he was thrown a curveball at birth. Max, like Aria, was an organ donor. He almost was not an organ donor because my experience was absolutely horrible.
So, Marie, Max was never mobile either, right?
He could sit in a W shape. He did learn how to roll himself around. So he liked rolled himself underneath the furniture because that was his favorite spot, was right underneath the couch. That was his favorite spot. You see him 1 minute, next minute, where'd Max go? Look underneath the couch. There he's at. He did learn how to army crawl when we moved into a bigger house. For him, he actually learned how to crawl, so he could get up on all fours and crawl. He could climb down from the chair, climb down from the couch. So he was in a wheelchair as well.
And
He
then,
was able to do some things.
were you like Deborah and Salvador? Did you have to make the decision that, well, I guess I know the answer to this, but what was that progression like for you towards the end for Max?
So let's kind of back up a little bit. In November of 2015, the day before Thanksgiving, his shunt had failed again. I called Benny's office up and I said, "Look, here's the symptoms. What do you want me to do?" He said, "Come up, let's do an MRI." Sure enough, it failed. I begged him, literally begged him. I said, "Can I just take him home for a day? I don't want to spend another holiday in the hospital, but I'm just sick of the hospital." So I just begged and begged. And he said, "You can take him home. You can bring him back Friday morning. I will do surgery Friday morning." I said, "Okay, thank you." We went back Friday morning. So 3 hours came and went, and I hadn't heard anything. And I started getting nervous. I started going up to the nurse's station and asking the nurse to check on him because I hadn't heard anything. And I started pacing the walls. His neurosurgeon finally came to talk to me after 4.5 hours. He came out. He had this look on his face, and I knew something was wrong. He said he would continue to do surgery as long as his father and I wanted him to, but it was just a big band-aid. He couldn't do any more to fix it. We were going to talk about complex care and palliative care. The shunt got infected at the end of April. At that time, his dad and I decided that that was going to be the last surgery. He was going to get the shunt removed to have the external drain put in to clear the infection, and then the final surgery would be to put it back in. And then 3 weeks, sorry, 3 weeks after we did the final surgery, which was the day before my birthday, he passed away May 27th of 2016.
Let's get into some of the good stuff. Deborah, what are some of those joyful, surprising gifts? I know one thing, I loved seeing her. The Mexican, she had that beautiful red dress.
Yes, so it's a quinceañera in our culture, in our heritage, in our culture. We celebrate a girl becoming a young lady or a woman when she turns 15 years old. So similar to like a, I'm probably going to say this wrong, a bar mitzvah.
Yes,
In the Jewish culture, when they turn 13, when the young men turn 13, in the Mexican culture for the young ladies, when they turn 15, we have a big party. And we're just celebrating this beautiful girl walking into womanhood. We started planning a really big party for her a year before, with the caveat that it's touch and go, it's very tentative. Because she could get sick very quickly and her illnesses could last a very long time. And we constantly kept reminding her that if she didn't want to do this party, she didn't have to do it. It is tradition, but it's not a requirement. It's just something we wanted to do to celebrate her. That's what the whole thing is about. But every time we would remind her, you don't have to do this, she would give us this look like, but what do you mean? Why wouldn't I want to do this? This is for me. Of course, I want to do this. So we just continued planning everything, and we tried our best to include her in all of those parts of the process. It really turned out to be her party, and the week prior to the party, she started to become very sick, and she started getting sick in the way that looked familiar, as if she was going to get a terrible pneumonia again. Like the day of, we're like, okay, it's the day. You feeling good? We're gonna do this. And she was all smiles and just like, let's do it. And she actually did well. We were getting her dressed, we were getting all the things set up, and she was like the healthiest she had been in weeks. And we ended up having a really great time just celebrating her and her life. And we were really glad she was up for it and that she did it. Because we understood the reality of her situation, that the likelihood of her having other big moments in her life, like a prom or a wedding or anything else like that, the likelihood was less than other people. We didn't believe it was not possible. We were hoping for it, but we understood that there was a probability that it may not happen. So we wanted to do her quinceañera very big, very glamorous, very everything, as much as she would allow us to do. So she picked her dress color. She picked the dress that she got. She was visually impaired, so we legally blind. So we did have to like describe everything to her, have her touch and feel all the things. Like, is this, dress gonna feel too like ew, you don't like it, or it's got beads. Are you okay with the beads? Things like that. So she did enjoy all the attention, of course, but she also enjoyed being part of the planning process. And then the day of the party, we were very intentional on who we invited. Obviously, immediate family, very close family, but also just people that were part of her life. In families like ours, it's people are not so eager to dote on kids like mine. It's not very comfortable, especially if you've not done it before or you're not familiar with people that are disabled. It can be uncomfortable to spend time with them, or to intentionally be around them. So the few people that did do that, they really came and showed out for, really helped us make the celebration even more grand and more special than we had ever anticipated. It really was an amazing event. And I'm really glad that we did that and that it worked out, because a year later, she was no longer with us. And we were really glad that we gave her an opportunity to feel how much people loved her and how much people appreciated her, and just to give people an opportunity to love on her and to really celebrate the amazing person that she is. And so that was like the really big thing. There was lots of little victories and milestones and things to celebrate throughout her life, but that was by far like the biggest. And it's just something incredible. It's a treasure, a treasured memory that we have.
Yeah, and the pictures that I see of her, she is just beaming. Oh, she's just
Yes.
beaming. You could tell she absolutely loved it. Marie, what's a gift or something, a time or something or some things about Max that were a joy to you?
Max always had the biggest smile on his face. He was always laughing. He was the boss of the house. He could say hi and bye and wave hi and bye. He could say mama, dada, papa, baba was for cup. He came up with his own sign for mama. He did at one point, when we moved into the bigger house for him, we had these drawers that had locks, child locks on them, except the last one did not because it was broken. My son decided he was going to play in the drawer, and he kept opening it, shutting it. I was watching him do it, and I'm like, just thinking in my head, I'm like, you're going to pinch your fingers. You keep playing in this drawer, you're going to pinch your fingers. So I put my leg up against the drawer so he could no longer open it. And clear as day, and I'm not the only one that heard this, one of his sisters did. Clear as day, he said, "Move, mama." Yeah, clear as day. I'm like, did I just hear that? Is that what I heard? Yep, that's what I heard. Sister verified. Yep, I heard the same thing. His favorite cartoon was Mickey Mouse, and if you went and blocked his TV way, he would let you know how unhappy he was with you, because you were in the way of his favorite cartoon. He liked to play, he loved to laugh. He was just a happy-go-lucky kid, unless something was wrong and he wasn't feeling good. Even then, he would still laugh. He also was a G-tube fed baby, or not baby, but we got the G-tube put in. He was 6, I think, when he got that put in. He did eat by mouth. He did eat solids through mouth as long as they were like periods. So like he could do mashed potatoes. He loved tomato soup. That's what him and I would do. I would make tomato soup, put a whole bunch of crackers in it, mush them up there. That way he could eat it, and him and I would share food a lot. So he would get tomato soup and mom would eat tomato soup with him.
I like watching you two. Nobody else can see this, but when you two say something and one of the other one will smile, it's like you can tell you two are relating to or nodding while what the other one's saying. It's fun watching you two talk. I'm going to turn a corner here, and I'm going to ask you a probing question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I feel like there may be, other Pereavers out there who've been, caregivers to their kids of disabilities, some just as severe as your children, some not. So I think it may help them by hearing someone who's been down the road and maybe you're willing to talk about it. How did you feel when your child finally passed? Was there any sense of relief of not being the caregiver? And then, if there was, did you feel guilty that you felt relieved? I mean, how was that for you? Because I know, like elderly people, you hear that. It's like, well, they've lived a long, full life, and I was their caregiver for 6 years, and I'm just glad they're gone. And yes, I'm relieved. And some of them struggle with the guilt that I'm relieved. So, how was that for you too? Deborah, what was that like for you? Did you go through any of that?
Yes, in my case, like I mentioned earlier, Aria was in palliative care for 5 years before she ultimately passed. So there was a lot of anticipation on my part. I could see it was coming, and there were a lot of other close calls before she did finally die. So the relief I felt was not necessarily as relief from the caregiving. As opposed to relief that she's no longer suffering. Salvador and I did feel, well, I can't really speak for him, but I believe I felt that She was in the PICU for really struggling for like 20 days before she died. And I feel like some of those days she was hanging on for us. And when she did die, I feel like I felt relief that she, I don't know if she felt pressure to stay for us, but I felt relief that any of that was gone. That if she did feel like, oh, I got to be here for mom and dad, that she was didn't have to worry about mom and dad. You know, we told her and we assured her, hey, kiddo, it's okay. Mom and dad will be just fine. You know, if it's time to go, go. It's okay. Mom and dad are really gonna miss you because we love you a lot. So I felt that's where my relief was and still is more than the caregiving. I would do all of that and more again because I just love and miss her so much. And that was part of her existence. This may sound weird, but the guilt comes from getting extremely like sad about it later. Like, 'cause I was just like, ah, you know, my, you know, faith is huge for us. So just being excited for her. She's there. She's with the Lord. She's, you know, in her new body. She's feeling great. You know, she's in safety and in comfort and in peace. Her body's finally at peace. So we're just kind of on this high of it, like she's made it. She made it past her finish line. She made her race is done. And she did such a good job. We're really proud of her. But then after the realization of, wow, she's like not here. When it hit, that's when I think that's when I started feeling guilty. Like, I want her here with me and feeling guilty that it, I know it wasn't that, but it kind of felt like you would rather her be here suffering than to be healed and whole. And,
Because that missing her was so strong.
yes. So that's where I would feel guilty because I'm like, I don't like these feelings are so selfish, but they're not. They're just normal parts of the grief process. But that was me just trying to figure out my way with this new part of life that I have to do now. So
And you
that's what it was like for me.
and Aria was your only child, so
Yes.
there was no one else to take your attention or to need you at that point either. Marie, did I see a couple tears?
You did. Sorry.
You don't have to apologize.
Okay.
I knew this was gonna be the rough part of it, to be honest. With Max, I didn't feel like that. I didn't feel the relief at all. It's something that I was accustomed to. I did it for 9 years. Being in and out of the hospital for 9 years was, and in and out of doctor's offices for 9 years was my life. I accepted that. In the beginning, it was rough when he was first born, and we had to deal with that. I'd had a rough time with it. Because his life was literally, we'd take 2 steps forward and then we'd take 10 steps back. And that was just how it went. But then eventually I just got used to the fact that, okay, as long as he's alive, this is his life. This is what I'm going to do. This is my child. I'm going to take care of him. I'm not going to give him up for adoption. I have always struggled with his death. When I met Laura, and to this day, this part of it is not completely off. It's in the back of my mind, but it's still there. I've hated God for taking my son from me. One of the worst things that a parent could ever hear after the passing of their son or passing of a child or a medically needy child. One of my aunts, who I don't speak with for many different reasons, but one of them is because when I told her that Max had passed, she had said, well, at least he's in a better place now. That is the worst thing you could ever say to a mom, that her child has just passed away. It's not something that I was ready to hear, that I wanted to hear. To this day, I don't want anybody to ever tell me that either, to be honest. We knew back in November of 2015 that he was slowly deteriorating. But nobody could give us like how long he had left. And that was always up in the air. So I felt like I wasn't really prepared for him to die. This past year has been really rough because he would have been 18 in December. He would have graduated high school this year. I did go to both high schools' graduations. One was for Laura's granddaughter, the other one I felt was for Max. Because he would have graduated with a lot of my friends on Facebook. Their kids went to Parker High School, and that's where Max would have graduated high school from. Somebody a few months ago put in my head the 9 and 9 mark, which meant he passed away 9 years ago, and he was 9 years old when he passed away. I have not been able to get that thought out of my head ever since it's been put in my head. I don't believe that the person said it intentionally to hurt me. But it's something that I haven't been able to get out of my head.
Well,
I don't.
I really appreciate you just being real and honest, Marie. Yeah, we've been walking this journey together, what, 8 years? 8 years of the nine, probably.
Yep, because you and I met, well, not quite a year after Max passed.
I know you were very raw and very angry then. And I know you say that you're still very angry at God. But man, have I seen some softening though. I mean, I know that anger comes and goes, I think, is what it is with you.
It does come and go, and like I said, it's not. When I met Laura, it was at the forefront of my brain, and it was I hate God, don't change my mind, you're not going to change my mind. I cussed and swore at God for taking
Yes,
my
she did,
child.
right in my living room.
Laura will contest to that, like hardcore, that I cussed and swore at God a lot. But as the years have went on, it's still in my mind, but it's more towards the back versus the front of it. And I don't dwell on it. There are some
And you, I know you
times.
said it's like, well, God and I just have an agreement. I'm mad at him and he knows
Yeah,
it.
pretty much. That's kind of where I'm at with it. That
But
I'm
I
mad
also
at
know
him
there's something
and
in you that still has a heart for God.
you see that. I don't see that, but
Well,
you see that.
I
So
do.
we're gonna go with that.
So, Deborah, what has your relationship with God been like after Aria passed?
For context, I grew up in the church. I have been saved since I was 7 years old. I was baptized at 13, and I can't even count how many times I've rededicated my life over all these years. My relationship with the Lord has been, for the most part, positive. I started feeling like the guy in the Bible, I forget his name, the one that's like, help me with my unbelief.
Oh yes, yeah. Jairus's, yeah, when Jesus Jairus's, yeah, his name is Jairus, yeah. I believe, help my unbelief.
I started feeling like that when I got to the part of, okay, God, what do I do now? Because Aria is my only child. I was her caregiver her whole life, all 15, almost 16 years. She died just a few days before her 16th birthday. And, I was her primary caregiver the entire time. And the worst part the day she died was walking out of the hospital without her. I had done that before when she was born, but I was able to go back to her. This time we were going home, and that was it. And so over some time, I was like, okay, Lord, I think I'm ready to hear from you. What do I do now? My season of caregiving with Aria is over. My time to parent her on this side, on, Earth side, is done. What's next? I gotta dive in. I'm digging deep because I need to know what to do now. And I still as of today, don't know what that is. And in December, it will be 6 years since Aria has passed away. And I still don't know for sure what I'm to do. I'm not ruling out that he hasn't been giving me signals and things to, revelations here and there. But I'm struggling with my confidence in my faith since she has passed. So whereas I would be like, oh yeah, that was the Lord. I know, yeah, no doubt about it. Now I'm struggling with, does he even like hear me anymore? Like, what's going on? I grew up in church. Like, I should be getting like burning bushes and all these things, just popping up everywhere. Like, I like they it should be clear as day, obvious. Like, I should not be struggling so much to know if the Lord's speaking to me like he used to, or like I'm familiar with.
I think that's a big thing, the way I'm familiar with. It's like everything is different now.
It
Everything
is.
is different. Even our relationship with the Lord, whether it's good, bad, ugly, everything is different. Marie's laughing.
So that's
I am
where my
because you know
struggle is
me.
currently.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up. I want to give you both a chance. What would you say to another parent who's just lost their disabled child and just feels completely lost and undone? Do you have like any words of hope? How do you take step forward? What do you do?
For me, I would say the biggest thing is to take care of yourself. I only say that because when Max passed, I did not take care of myself. I actually, a month after he passed, I ended up in the hospital for a week. I was having a hard time breathing. I was not taking care of myself. I was not eating right. I was literally brokenhearted. That's actually is a diagnosis. And I was diagnosed with brokenhearted syndrome. But yeah, I ended up in the hospital. I couldn't breathe. I just couldn't function. It was a task just to get out of bed and even take a shower. So my best advice is to take it one day at a time. Take care of yourself. If you don't, you will end up in the hospital. You will end up sick. There is no doubt. It will happen. So just take it one day at a time. Take care of yourself. Put you first. You put your child first for how many years? Take care of yourself. Put you first for once. Put you first for once.
You probably don't even know how to do that for a while.
You don't, you're right. You don't, because I didn't have, it wasn't just me. I had three daughters at home, but I shut everybody out. I absolutely shut everybody out. I shut his father out. I pushed everybody away after Max died. I really struggled. My another suggestion I would have, if you aren't in counseling, that helped me a lot. I
And
also.
even though I was gonna say, even though nobody understands your direct loss because your child is different. We may have had similar losses or similarities, but it's still your own relationship, your own, and especially for those of you who've been caregivers for your children for years, that is such a unique and such a different kind of bonding that has just been cut off from you. I think, would you also suggest maybe finding other people who have had been the caregivers of their children? Just so
Yes.
that you don't feel, because I think Marie, you felt like nobody gets it. Nobody. And we don't. And yet if you could find some other people who have at least dealt with, I've been the caregiver for years and now my child's gone, people that are ahead of you that can just walk this with you.
I did.
Is that
So
hard to find though?
it is. So I was going through counseling. I was going through counseling even before Max had passed. I was part of a grief group, like a grief therapy group. It wasn't like doing anything for me. I could tell it wasn't doing anything for me. I found you in a paper. I found you in the newspaper.
That was a God thing. See, that was a God thing. As mad as you are at God, that was a God thing. See, you can't be all mad at him because he got us together.
I did try to go to the Compassionate Friends, TCF. I felt so displaced. I felt like I was the youngest mom there.
You know, just
It
pray
was
for
really
God to
rough.
connect you to somebody.
Yeah, TCF, I just felt displaced and I just felt I didn't belong at all. And it was so big and I felt disconnected just because it was so big and I didn't deal with it well. And then, like I said, I found Laura in a newspaper. So I went and saw her and we talked and she said at the time she was doing this out of her home, the grief support group, but then I felt more connected. It's a smaller group. There's like what a dozen of us.
At the moment, yeah.
And I like it a lot better because we're a close-knit group. We talk outside of the group. We do fun things. We do annual cookouts. We do two of them a year. So I feel a lot closer and it's helped me a lot. It really has. Laura has helped me a lot. Thank you, Laura.
Well, I wasn't expecting all
Just being
that.
able to talk about Max and has helped a lot and tell his story and share him. I know last month, during our session, I did share Max and I actually shared his last heartbeat with the group. So that was a special thing for me to do, and Laura allowed me to do that, and I was thankful for that.
So, Deborah, what would you, any thoughts for
Hey, that's
parents, a
probably
word for
me.
them, or any thoughts about, you know, you've just lost your child and they just feel in that lost place right now?
Yes, I actually want to echo what Marie was saying about taking care of yourself. I also encountered many health issues after Aria passed away. For the duration of her life, I was in survival mode, trying to keep her alive and well, and just completely neglected my own health through her life. And especially after she transitioned into eternal rest. Since she has passed, I've had a stroke. I've been diagnosed with post-stroke epilepsy. I had really out of control diabetes and high blood pressure, which were the contributors to those things. And I have other complications from those things, high blood pressure and diabetes, like chronic kidney disease. And I have some eye diseases as well that haven't really impaired my vision, but I do have lower vision than I had before. And my mental health really struggled a lot right after Aria passed. I gave myself some time right when I was ready. It's like, okay, I think I can seek support from all those people that said, let me know what you need. I need to talk to somebody. I need to be around people again. That's when COVID started and we went into lockdown and no one was seeing anybody. So that was very difficult for me. As I was caring for Aria through her life, I stayed home to care for her. So I was not working outside of my home and I was by myself. And at the beginning of COVID, my husband was still working. Salvador was still able to go to work. And then we quarantined together. But as things slowly started opening up again, and people were slowly getting back together, he returned to work and I was by myself again with nobody at home and still people not meeting or anything, not really yet. So I just had like a downward spiral with my mental health. And I sought professional help and ended up having to do an intensive outpatient therapy group or an IOP. And because I wasn't working, I was able to do it. So I took advantage and did it. It was very, very helpful. I learned a lot of things like coping mechanisms that were much more healthy than the not so great things I was choosing to do to help me cope with my grief. And I'm still getting help with those things. But it's a process, and I learned that it's a process. So along with taking care of yourself, I would add to any new bereavers that to acknowledge the losses, not just the loss of your child, but to acknowledge other losses that come with that. For me, it was, loss of my child, loss of my purpose, some days loss of my identity. But there were also a lot of losses. My connection to the disabled community was now severed. All of the people on her medical team, I had no reason to meet with them anymore. Some of them were with us for her whole life, and it just felt like I lost them too. Also, because she was, my only child, I had no other children that went to school or anything. So I lost her education team and those relationships, and just the relationships I had with family and friends that we were associated with because we have children. It felt like a loss.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody like left me, or I didn't feel like anyone abandoned me. I just felt like the connection wasn't as strong. Some connections were lost, but that just happens anyway, just in life in general. But this felt different, and it made me very uncomfortable. But I struggled more when I would not acknowledge that that loss was part of it, and that I was just another thing to work around and learn to navigate with on this grief journey that I'm on now, because it's not just a, linear, like point A, point
Right.
B, I'm there, I'm done. Like this is just a continuous thing that I'm learning to live with. So I would just encourage other bereavers, just to, when you feel sad about something, acknowledge it and, seek the Lord's assistance and guidance to help you work with that, because it's something you're going to have to work out anyway. So it's not going to get better if you ignore it. So just face it, and it's going to hurt, but not dealing with it is also going to hurt. So may as well try to deal with it.
To go off of what Deborah just said about losing relationships with the doctors and stuff, I guess I had the opposite experience that she had. The girls and I, after Max had passed, and up until COVID hit, we used to go up to the Children's Hospital in Madison, yearly visit. We'd go to see the doctors, the nurses, talk to them, see them, visit with them, reminisce about Max. Till COVID hit, then we kind of stopped doing that.
But it's still different.
It is
It's,
different.
yeah, it is different. And so you still have to reconcile that difference. And I think that's a really good insight, Deborah, is all those losses on top of losses you guys deal with in a depth that most of us don't. When we lose our child, you lose communities that were around you. Well, I want to thank you both so much for coming on with me today and sharing Aria and Max with us, for being honest and vulnerable in our conversation. And I also just love the way sometimes it was like, yep, that was the same for me. And other times it was like, well, that's not what it was like for me. And that's good. That's what people need to hear. We're all on our own journey. And I just really admire and appreciate you both. So thank you again so much for coming on today and sharing your kids with us and just your journey with us.
Thank you.
Thank
Really
you.
appreciate this opportunity to share my girl with you all, and to meet Marie and hear all about Max. Thank you
Well,
both
thank
very
you.
much.
Thank you, Deborah. It was nice meeting you as well.
Wow, I have nothing to add to that except that I hope and pray that it blessed you and that you will take a minute to share this with others. Both Marie and Deborah attended a GPS Hope and Healing retreat, and since we still have room available at our October retreat in New York, I ask them to share a little bit with you about their experience. Marie and Deborah, we talked earlier that you both went on a GPS Hope and Healing retreat, and I would love for the listeners to hear from you. Just share something about the retreat, what you liked about it, why would you encourage someone else to go? Marie?
So I went to the Iowa retreat a couple of years ago. It was very nice getting to meet with other parents, besides just our little small group of people, but it was a small group as well. But hearing other parents and their stories, and being able to share my child with other people and hearing about other children is really eye-opening, and I didn't feel so alone.
So, Deborah, what can you share about the retreat?
I went to the retreat in Texas and it was really, really special. I believe it was really refreshing to be around people that were, this is going to sound weird, but we're also sad, but we were all in it together. And I think that that really was something that we had yet to experience before we went on the retreat. And it was, I mean, we were sad, but we were also very just to be around other people that were acknowledging the loss but celebrating the life that was had, just to see the same love that other parents have for their children in life and in death. It really was encouraging to me. That might sound weird, but it was encouraging to me that the feelings I had were the same in essence. S different circumstances, but just ideally, it was the same. It's all just love.
Invalidated.
Yeah, felt validated, and it was all just love. Even the sadness was, just love being expressed for our children. And I really enjoyed how much of a community was cultivated, and just that, even that short amount of time, just the bonds that were made. And sadly, I haven't really been able to keep in touch with many people, but I know if we were to meet again, it would be like time had not passed. Like maybe it was like the next day or something. Like I know we could pick up right where we left off, because that's how strong of a bond we made during that retreat. My favorite part was the faith and the worship aspect of the retreat. I really felt like that provided an opportunity to get intimate with the Lord again, I guess in a more compact space than I had before. And it was just really encouraging to really feel the Lord's presence strong at the retreat amongst other people going through a similar experience that I was going through.
Okay. And if I remember right, Salvador came, basically you dragged him into it. But he ended up being glad he came.
Yeah, but we both were just extremely happy that we went, and we both got so much out of it as individuals, but also as a couple. We really did feel more united and just more, well, yeah, united in Aria's life. We were very confident in how we parented her, how we raised her, how we cared for her. And we were both feeling kind of a little lost after she passed away. And some days we still have that. But after the retreat, it really did kind of encourage us in a more positive aspect of the journey, especially the faith component. That was very helpful for both of us. So we were very glad to go.
Can I say one more thing before you decide? Another thing that I could say, if you get the chance to, you should go on the grief cruise. My daughter and I and my best friend went in February. And it was amazing. Being able to go on a cruise was a bucket list, number one. But the fact that we went on the grief cruise, it did help. My best friend lost her husband a couple years ago. It's been 3 years, so she had been really struggling with the loss of her husband, and it helped her a lot to work through that. It helped me a lot. One of the workshops that I did was a writing one, and that has helped me a lot. Something that I've been working on with my therapist on. But yes, so if you get a chance, go on the grief cruise.
Yeah, a grief cruise seems like an oxymoron, but it really isn't, because it's just, you can just relax and you're taken care of, and then you get to get tools and refreshed, and
You meet
yeah.
new people and you make more friends.
That's right. That's right.
And it's not only couples that have lost children. There are single moms, there are single dads.
And the
It's
grief cruise is
not
for
an
any loss. Thank you, Marie, for that extra mention of the grief cruise. I will put a link in the show notes for anyone who wants to know more about that. It will also talk about that. We're doing a 2-day pre-cruise retreat, Renew and Remember. So all that will be there. I'll put a link for that in the show notes, as well as a link for the GPS Hope and Healing Retreat coming up in October. Let's go ahead with this week's birthday segment. Christopher Hotch was born on August 10th and left us at age 31. Aaron Treblehorn was born on August 16th and left us at age 21. We celebrate the day these two boys came into the world and into the lives of their families. We know it will always be a special day, and it will always be a day worth celebrating. If you would like to have your child's birthday shared with the other listeners, I would love to be able to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. There's just a little form for you to fill out, submit the needed information, and we will add your child to the birthday segment the week of his or her birthday. And Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen to that week's podcast episode. I want to say thank you again to Chris and Renee Treblehorn for sponsoring today's episode in loving memory of your son, Aaron. I will add a link to the show notes for this also. If you would like to sponsor an episode in memory of your son or your daughter for the week of your choice. As we close out this episode, I don't think any of the Pereavers listening will mind if I give an extra behind-the-microphone hug and recognition to those of you who have lost a uniquely special child like Max or Aria. May you continue to lean on God in your journey of finding meaning and purpose again after your years of being a caregiver. I also want to thank Deborah and Marie one more time for trusting us with their stories. I hope and pray there are Pereavers listening right now who feel less alone because of their honesty and their realness. No matter how you lost your child, how long ago, or how recent it's been, we are here at GPS Hope to walk with you through the suffocating darkness, guiding you to a place of light and to a life of meaning and purpose again. And this is not in spite of your child's death, but because of his or her life. So hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.